right. Good afternoon and welcome to the School for Successful Ranching. My name is Lauren Urbanczyk and I will be moderating the session today. So at this time, I would like to ask you to please silence all cell phones and remove your hats. We would like to take this time to thank our generous sponsors of the School for Successful Ranching for their support of this program and commitment to producer education. They have small displays set up in the hallway on this floor, and we ask that you visit their booths in the expo and say thank you. We couldn't do this program without them. Sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Dow AgriSciences, Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Merck Animal Health, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, Bayer, Micro, Diacero, Texas Range Minerals, Neogen Geneseek, Rabo AgriFinance, Texas Beef Quality Assurance, and Sylvius Insurance Group. If you are a new TSCRA member, we are holding a new member orientation tomorrow at 1 p.m. in room 101. We hope that you can come and learn about what the TSCRA does for you and the cattle industry. Our next presentation was a suggestion directly from some of our past attendees that expressed a need for more information on what to do if they weren't able to get a vet out to their place. This session, No Vet, Now What, is presented by Dr. Don Goodman. Dr. Goodman comes from Navasota, Texas. As a practicing veterinarian, almost every day for the past 38 years, he has found himself inside cattle producers, cow or pens. With his in-the-trenches experience, he has developed a passion for designing and implementing herd health programs for cattle producers, including the aspects of biosecurity, immunization, nutrition, parasitology, and ranch management. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Don Goodman.
Thank you, Lauren, for that great introduction. As Lauren said, I'm a practitioner of some 39 years, and I'm probably the luckiest guy in the world to be part of such a noble profession, a rewarding profession, and I appreciate being here. I noticed in the proceedings where I was introduced or defined as a consultant. And so I thought, you know, that's a pretty great esteemed introduction to be a consultant. But then I got to thinking one time, my definition of a consultant is a steer teaching a bull what to do. So teaching him his job. So As I go through today, consulting you, think about that. So, as Lauren said, I'm very fortunate to be... Are we working here? Yeah, here we go. This didn't work. All right. Fortunate to be in pens and somebody's pasture just about every day of my last 49 years. And I've seen white cattle, black cattle, red cattle, wild cattle, pet cattle. But my favorite cow of all, people often ask me, can you see her over there? That little black one right there? That's my favorite cow right there, right? I mean, I took that picture in 2015. 6 weights were $2.50 a pound. Oil was over $100. Times were good. Things were great. But, you know, I'm a producer, just like you, been in the trenches, and we have to be efficient producers. So, what I'm going to walk you through, or my approach today, is going to be trying to focus on two things: being proactive and being prevented. Okay? Prevention and being proactive in animal health. It's a tough topic to sit up here and say, you can't find a vet, you're going to need this, or you're going to need that. Okay? I don't think anybody can do that. But what I'd like to leave you with are some guidelines. Okay? And some of those guidelines are training your vet. Okay? We're going to talk about how to train your vet the proper way. Okay? So we won't need your vet just to always be a fire engine putting out fires. Next thing we're going to talk about is herd health. Okay? How a herd health program incorporates into prevention. Okay? Then we're going to talk about decisions. There's going to be a time when you can't get Dr. Google, you know, to help you out. So we're going to have to make smart decisions, because 70% of everything gets better regardless, okay? So oftentimes we may not need to do anything, okay? Then we're going to talk about diagnosis, making a good diagnosis. And not just a band-aid approach. And then, foremost, I want to talk about how you can utilize a veterinarian for maximum utilization. I want you to start thinking a veterinarian not being so much an expense, but how to use your veterinarian as a return on your investment, just like you would with feed or wormers or whatever. So that's some of the topics we're going to talk about. But the main thing I want to leave you with today is establishing a veterinary client-patient relationship. Okay? Because I promise you, the better relationship you have with the vet, better with the veterinarian, the better service you're going to get. Okay? So, those are the topics we're going to do. I'm going to start out showing you how not to use your veterinarian. Okay? That right there. That right there, I promise you, always works out in an adversarial event. You know, it usually starts out like on a Friday, about 7 o'clock. My son or my daughter, you know, they got an event, football game or something, and I get this call. Yes, this is Bill. I said, yes, Bill. Bill who? Bill Milady. This is Mr. Milady. I live out here on Lost Cause Ranch, down No Hope Road, and I need you now. Okay. What seems to be the problem? Well, I think my cow's calving. Well, how long has she been calving? I left, you know, I work out of town, I come in. I know she wasn't calving when I left last Sunday. So I said, well, how do you know she's calving? Well, there's a leg sticking out, and there's some black chickens with a red head that's walking around. And I said, okay, I'll be there. But I want you to make sure if she dies before I get there, call me. So I get there, and you can tell what's wrong by the smell, right? So as I'm walking over to her and asking him questions, you know, she died. Okay? So we started, his first time to meet me, a very, very bad situation. Nothing good can happen. Because now I got a Billy. Okay? And now Mr. Bill Me Later doesn't want to pay. So we start off on a bad foot. Nothing comes out good on this. Okay? And so, I'm going to show, and this could have been prevented from the start. So I'm going to show you, as we go through here, how not to use a veterinarian. You know, prevention, right? How many of you, I don't want to see a show of hands, how many of you, you know, go out and you change your oil in your car? Okay? How many of you go to your dentist prophylactically and get your teeth cleaned? How many of you go to medical checkups? Huh? How about colonoscopies after when you're over 50? You know, every 7 years. I don't see any hands going up. Okay, there you go. All right. Me too. So it's about prevention, okay? And I'm going to work into this more and more and more. So here's something else that the approach that oftentimes clients look into to veterinarians is the Band-Aid approach. You know, I want, doc, I need you because I need an antibiotic, you know. But the real problem, yeah, that cow needs an antibiotic. She needs a whole lot of other things too, right? But what, you know, you need a veterinarian to the primary cause of a disease, okay? Let me give you a couple examples. Calf scours. If you own cattle, you probably had some calf scours. So you go to a veterinarian, hey, I need an antibiotic. I need some vaccine. And the real problem may not be the pathogen or the germ. We may have other things going on. Maybe low in trace minerals, low in copper or zinc, immunostimulants. We may have something immunosuppression going around, like a BVD. And so oftentimes, this starts an adversarial relationship. You know, that antibiotic you sold didn't work. It didn't work. But the real problem, the primary problem, it's something deeper, okay? Something that goes deeper. And vet schools are the problem, you know? We're taught as primary problem in disease are pathogens and germs, okay? We forget about the real problem, animal husbandry. I hate they change the name from animal husbandry to animal science. That's what it used to be back in the 50s and 60s at A&M. So 90% of a disease problem goes back to management and animal husbandry. We can look at, say, foot rot, okay? Foot rot is caused by, it's a pathogen that goes through the skin, through the feet, and it's due to maceration, when it's real wet, real dry, cracked hooves, and that is the primary problem. It's not the antibiotic that's not working, and so we put a Band-Aid, we give something antibiotics, and then it goes right back out. And so it just, you know, we're not working. So we're all looking for this, right? And like I said, I'm just like you. I'm looking for that silver bullet. I'm looking for an easy way out. Antibiotics, miracle-mycin, you know, it doesn't exist. We have to address the primary problem. Society dictates it, okay? Society dictates. Are we in an era now of more antibiotics or less antibiotics? So we're going to have to be better stewards, better animal husbandry. Now, I want to show you how to use a veterinarian. Veterinarians like this. Are there any large animal veterinarians in here? Well, that's good and bad, because I wanted some support, because I think I'm the only one that doesn't like those fire engine calls. But this is what veterinarians like to do, okay? This is what I do for my clients right here. There's four numbers up there. There's two numbers that are, by the way, these are average, five-year rolling average, standard benchmarks. And these were compiled in North Dakota State. I'm sure that the SPA, the Standard Performance Analysis at the Ag Life Science had these same numbers. They are more applicable to Texas. You can look them up. But there's two ways to make money in the cow-calf commercial business. What are they? This number right here, 90.5% in weaning weight. So I want you to remember those numbers. Put them in your pocket. We're going to come back and use them here in a minute. Okay? 90.5 and 553. That's a standard rolling. Every one of you that have cows know these numbers. Okay? These are measurable parameters of health and reproduction. Health and reproduction. We look at the preg rate. That's pretty easy to figure. When the veterinarian comes out, or whoever, and looks at the preg rate. That's the national average. But look at the loss here. That's the national average. There's almost a 4% loss from the cows that are pregnant due to, until we load them on the trailer, 90.5%. Dystocia, embryonic loss, calf scours, summer pneumonias, that's a big loss. But then let's look at the loss here, right here. So that's only 9 calves out of 10 that we load up. That's the national average. That's a lot of loss. And of course, weaning weights. This right here is a figure we don't often think about. But those are the calves that are born in the first 21 days of the calving season, 62%. If you're way below that, it's probably because your cows are not in body condition school. They ought to be, okay? Or that bull, maybe he was fertility tested, but he wasn't really doing his job. So we've got problems. These numbers are how... And I'm going to show you how a veterinarian can help you improve these numbers. I know you get tired of hearing about a herd health program. Dr. Anderson's doing like a 3-hour session today on herd health programs. Here are the key elements that I think that are really, really important for a good herd health program. There's no one, any of those, that are more important than the others. They all are synergistic. They all are pieces of a puzzle that come together. You have to have all of them. You can't have a really, really good vaccination program. That's what we think a herd health program is. A lot of people, it's a misnomer. Well, give me a herd health program, Doc. And we just talk about vaccination. You have to incorporate all of these. You can't be really good at one and not good at the other. Management, that's you. Each one of you have your own personal craft. No two of you, I promise, do it alike. Okay? Management, each one of you are on an island by yourself. Management is incorporating, implementing breeding soundness exams, okay? Maturity exams in your heifers. You would not believe how important getting a good reproductive exam, pelvic exam, on your developing heifers, making sure, if nothing else, they even have a reproductive tract. You don't know how embarrassing that is to come in to a 5-6-year-old cow and she doesn't even have a reproductive tract. Okay? So, those are the things, implementation. Vaccination program versus immunization. Who knows the difference? The big difference. It's a fallacy if you think when you vaccinate a calf that you're going to get 100% immunity. It's a fallacy. You're going to get 100%. Look at our flu vaccines in humans last year. 10% immunity at best. We sure don't get it here. I can promise you. Vaccination is just a physical act of sticking a needle in an animal. Okay? If we vaccinate these animals, these calves and cows, and they're highly stressed, their cortisol levels are high, they're great vaccines, but they're not going to seroconvert or develop an immunity. I would just assume you put it on their backs than run them through the chute and stress them. If we have high fever or high temperatures, ambient temperatures, we're not handling the vaccine right, why put them through that stress? Save the money, okay? The vaccines, we all vaccinate for blackleg. What's the most ubiquitous problem pathogen out there that we worry about? Four-way virals, IBR, BVD, PI3, BRSV, four-way virals. They are shared just like the common cold in cattle. Okay? Those are the ones we need to worry about. Biosecurity. What's biosecurity? All biosecurity is just keeping pathogens out or keeping diseases out. Most of the diseases that you have, they've been bought and paid for. A good example of biosecurity would be like PI testing your calves or bulls, any new income. I would like to advise you if you do buy something new, okay? If you do buy something new, at least quarantine it for 4 to 6 weeks at the minimum. 4 to 6 weeks before you introduce it to your mother herd. That's a form of biosecurity. Because you can have a great vaccination program, and if you have pregnant cows, say, next to a stocker operation that has a lot of IBR and so forth like that, forget it. Okay? You're wasting. There's no vaccine in the world that's going to overcome that. We need a barrier to stop that nose-to-nose contact. Another good form of biosecurity would be fencing, good fencing, and trichomoniasis, or trich, the venereal disease, that we are making big headways in Texas with the trich right now, that the program that was started some 7-8 years ago. But by having a good biosecurity program, testing bulls, when you purchase bulls, good biosecurity. Parasitism. I could talk for days about parasites. You know, we have subclinical parasites. Parasitism that subclinical, you really can't see it, but it's robbing you of those weaning weights. Okay? It's killing us on our weaning weights, on our calves. We need some parasites. Okay? We need some parasite for immunity. You know, this immunity thing, if you've been keeping up with the parasite control programs and immunity, and it's kind of gone full circle. Back when I started practicing, it was a common practice only to inject the cows that looked wormy. You know? And now it's kind of come full circle that we're exposing, you know, all our animals, and we're making these super resistant parasites. So maybe a train of thought is maybe that older cow, that fatter cow, maybe we shouldn't, you know, deworm her. Because 80% of the parasites are in 20% of the animals. That's the thinking behind that. Okay? So when we do inject or deworm an animal, that wormer is only good for about therapeutically 35 days. So she's constantly taking a grass and infecting herself. So we need to think about using products to treat the whole pasture, okay, long-acting product to treat the pasture to break that life cycle. I'm rambling about parasites. I could go on and on and on, but I'm just trying to get you thinking when you go to your veterinarian to talk about these things that Dr. Goodman talked about, okay? Nutrition. Vet schools, for whatever reason, like to separate nutrition from pathogens or from diseases, okay? I was poorly trained in clinical nutrition, but I'm going to make it real easy for you in about 2 minutes. Everybody tries to make nutrition. You got four components. You got energy, protein. We always think about energy and protein because that is our biggest expense, probably $500-$600 a year, input cost, expense, right? So I'm a one of poopology. I like to look at poop, okay? Normal poop should be loose but stacked. You know, if you're getting your piles and they're getting up about like this high, you probably got too much fiber, and we need some protein and some energy. Okay, if she's squirting from here to that wall, she's probably, you're wasting your money. Too much energy and protein. So you want that fecal pile to stack, be loose but stack. All right. Then we talk about the other components: vitamins and minerals. Your vitamins, we got green grass. They're usually are fat soluble, A, D, and E. They're stored in the liver for long periods of time. During drought injection, we need to start thinking about them. Most of your supplements, your rations, have oral vitamins. They're readily absorbed. Minerals, not so much. Every one of you should have a good mineral oral supplementation, okay? And what I mean by good, you pay for what you get most of the time, okay? You got a lot of oxides, look at your mineral tag. You got a lot of oxides, what's iron oxide? What's iron oxide? Rust. You got rust in you're buying rust, you think that's going to be absorbed? So look at your mineral tag, okay? There's four trace minerals that are very, very important. Copper, zinc, selenium, and manganese. 70% of our grasses in the United States are deficient in those four trace minerals. They're very important for reproduction and health. We have to have them on board. If we don't, we're going to get those crappy reproductive rates, and we're going to get those poor weaning weight. So, here we are. The animal scientists tell us that this cow needs to be in a body condition score of 5 prior to breeding. Okay? I think I got her in pretty good shape. She's not fleshy. I didn't waste any money. I think think she's ready to go. We're fighting time. If we look at a year-long reproductive cycle of that cow, 9 months and 12 months, she's pregnant. 3 months, it takes 45 days for that uterus to involute to get her ready to breed. And then we got two shots at her. We got 45 days, so we're fighting time. So we got to do everything we can to expedite that. Here we got this calf. We want this calf to weigh what? 553 pounds, just to be average. Okay, so we're fighting time. So we got to use the technology. And here is some technologies that are proven to get a return on your investment. Dewormers. This part of the world, well, my part of the world, is like paradise for parasites. Okay? We have to fight this. Return on your investment there. I think I look at a dewormer, kind of like an antibiotic. I'm going to give it my best shot. It's proven to use a white wormer, injected wormer, to get your maximum results for all the classes of worms. Your vaccine, don't just use a black lead. Okay, depending on what you're doing, are we preconditioning these calves? Your veterinarian can help you work the particular vaccine. Sometimes we vaccinate too much. I mean, if we have closed herds, not bringing anything in, sometimes I discourage vaccination. You know? Growth implants. Return on your investment. Right there. It's a paradigm that we look at things as expensive and not a return on your investment. These things here are return on your investment. Artificial insemination. EPD. I probably do a tenth of the C-section I used to prior to the, remember the big cattle days, you know? Remember those days, the giant breeds, you know, and the AI producers would give you a free calf puller with every 10 units, you know? It was, I mean, those days are gone because of genetics. They're great. Appropriate use of injectable trace minerals. Multimin 9. When it's given strategically with a good oral source, increasing reproductive rates. Given 30 days prior to calving, 30 days prior to breeding, works out good in your normal herd health protocols in the fall and the spring. Okay. Excellent product to help supplement your oral trace minerals program. And then castration. There you go. 10 cents more a pound. $10 a hundred. It's worth castrating. Younger the better. Younger the better. Back, and I'm keep preaching about this. This is how to circumvent these calls, these expensive calls. Because when you call a veterinarian out, yeah, it's going to be expensive just to put out a fire in the middle of the night. But the approach I want you to take is good management and an accurate diagnosis. How are we running on time, Lauren?
We have about
25 minutes. Excellent. Good. So an accurate diagnosis. I can't emphasize an accurate diagnosis. No. I remember a vet school prof I had, old guy about like me, he'd always tell me, you can't recognize the abnormal until you can recognize the normal. Okay? I know that's simplistic, but but it goes a long way in making a correct diagnosis. And sometimes, you know, don't beat up on your veterinarian, because he's out there in the middle of nowhere trying to make a diagnosis. It's not like, you know, he has access to ultrasounds and radiographs and blood chemistries and all this, and within 10 minutes, he's got some help, okay? It's tough out there in the real world, okay, by this picture right here. But an accurate diagnosis, and oftentimes, let me expound on that. In cattle medicine, it's not just the individual. We're looking at a diagnosis for the whole herd diagnosis, and not just individuals. Okay? So there's a big difference. Now, this is a favorite game I like to play. Okay? So I want some interaction. Y'all be the veterinarian. Okay? I'm going to give you a few clues, and you tell me the diagnosis. Because this is very important in making what? Good decisions and good recommendations. So here's a cow. She's down. This has been a rancher that has had numerous cases of downer cows, had some die in the past. I'm going to try to give you cases without telling you the problem. But we can go out and we can give her something in the vein. It usually happens this time of the year, real green, lush growing grass. Come on, somebody blurt it out. Grass tetany. Who said grass tetany? There you go. Okay, grass tetany. Grass tetany is what? Low magnesium. We see it this time of the year. Signs of stress. Very, very common problem. You see a cow just die dead in your pasture. You better go this time of the year. Late in their lactation or late gestation, it's probably going to be this. Grass tetany. So, to follow up on this, I would repeatedly go out, give her some calcium, boom, they get up. Give her some orally, they get up. Gave this one. She didn't get up. Why? Dr. Goodman didn't do a good exam. She had a broken leg. Okay? Dr. Goodman was in a hurry. He had three other calls. Always do a thorough, complete exam. I've seen veterinarians do surgery on calves with a broken leg or something like this, only to find out $500 or $600 later, we have a cleft palate. Do a thorough exam, okay, before you reach for something, before you do something. Look at the big picture is what I'm trying to say. Look at the big picture. This is a bull. I was called out on. Had repeated injections of antibiotics. Probably $200 worth of antibiotics. Wasn't getting better. Not going to get better. This bull had a case of OCD, osteochondritis desiccans, a very, very common problem in real fast-growing, good-doing bulls. His hock was just mush, radiographed it. Not going to get better. Unfortunately, a wrong decision was made. Because this calf was given an antibiotic with a very long withdrawal period. Okay? Very long withdrawal period. They like 39 days. So if you're going to make a decision and use an antibiotic, use one that's tissue friendly and is a short duration. Exanel comes to mind. Okay? It's got 48-hour withdrawal. So don't use an antibiotic, because we had to wait before we could humanely salvage this animal. 38 days. So, correct diagnosis with the correct... I don't know how it worked, but I had a video of this bull walking, and I'll simulate it. He's just really lame. Foot swollen. What's the first thing that comes to your mind? Cardinal sign of foot rot. Swelling and severe lameness. Given antibiotics repeatedly. Wouldn't get better. Why? Boom. You got to pick the foot up, people. Pick the foot up. You have to pick the foot up. I don't know how many times I've seen that. I can't tell you. We went in, put a block on the good claw, this claw right here. Pull that out, pared the sole out, 4 weeks, and he was good to go. This interesting case. These were very, very expensive embryo calves. Brahman embryo calves. Just had a rash. I mean, these were expensive embryo calves. Had a rash of calf scours. Swollen joints. This is pus in that swollen joint right there. Just immunosuppression. The calves that did live, I mean, we cultured, they had repeated, vaccinated, blah, 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 blah. Threw out money. I got called in, tested these animals. They had BVD, which is immunosuppressant. We had a PI animal in that pen, a registered cow. And I checked the livers. They were deficient in copper. Okay? So, no matter what we did, we didn't address the primary problem. We just put a Band-Aid was just put on it with antibiotics and vaccine, needlessly. This cow, very common problem. Not really, but we see it during really dry times of the year, coarse hay material, coarse material. Usually you'll see it in a herd problem. These cows develop bottle jaw, they can't eat. What if I say the tongue looks like a piece of wood? Woody tongue, yeah. It's a common inhabitant of the mouth. And they eat coarse material, gets infected, and the tongue, it literally looks like, really, just hard as a piece of wood. Treated very easily, sodium iodide, 2 injections, 2 weeks apart. She's doing well. This is another, quote, foot rot. Was treated repeatedly for foot rot. And a cut. You can't see it. I don't have the radiograph. But there was a wire circlage around that bone right there. Believe it or not, took the wire off. Cows are resilient. She's doing well. But you can't see it. It was grown in right there. You got to pick the foot up. Who knows what that is? That's exactly, if you were an autopsy, necropsy, a calf, that's exactly how blackleg would look. Right there. But this isn't blackleg. This is a calf that was given, quote, a sub-Q injection, and we got it in the muscle, and it necrosed that muscle. You say we're about 5 minutes? 15. Oh, good. Okay. So this right here is not blacklegged, but it was inadvertently given a sub-Q injection. Supposed to have been a sub-Q injection, given in the muscle. That's how muscle looks when we give these caustic foreign substances, antibiotic vaccines, in a muscle 24 days out. Yeah. Kind of scary. So, which brings us BQA. The next session is going to be talking about beef quality assurance. Using these foreign substances. Why we need to give it sub-Q. Let's look. Here's the boundary. This is a nuchal ligament, right? Up here at the top. We don't want to get above, give it in there. This is the spinal cord. The transverse process of the vertebra. This is in front of the scapula right here. Okay, so we want to give it kind of somewhere right in the middle right there. Please remember this. There's two sides of a neck. Okay? We don't have to give four and five things on one side. Let's put them on the other side and keep at least that far hands width. And if you can, stack them horizontally, because here's why you get these big abscesses. Are not. When we have these products, we give them vertical, and they come down, you get something aqueous, like Multamine, and it goes in with, say, a dewormer or oil-based adjuvant, boom, you're going to get one hell of a swelling when they mix together. So keep them apart, use the other side of the neck. All I got to say about that. Simplistic as it is, please read the label. Don't use an outdated drug or vaccine. When you're using more than one product, label it. We get in a hurry. I cannot tell you how many times I have double dosed something. Just because being in a hurry, not having the right. Recommend using 5/8 needles. They're going to talk more about all this in the BQA session, so I won't do that. Knowledge without mileage is BS. You can't see it, but there's egg all over my face right there. Bad picture. Never assume about anything, especially when you're handling with medicine and cattle, working cattle. Never assume. I went out on a routine visit to preg check some cows, pregnancy exam some cows. I went through about 15 cows, and I know I'm an Aggie, I'm a little slow, but every one of them were open. So I looked at the owner and I said, "When did you turn out the bull? Was it even checked?" She looked at me and said, "I don't even have a bull." Egg on my face. Never assume when you buy products. That convention floor is full of products. Never assume unless they meet these two criteria. They have production data, and they have clinical trials. Because testimonials, anecdotal evidence are great. Everybody wants to sell you something. You know, I love going to trade shows and just sitting behind, not being available. Well, where's your production data? Well, I do that. No, but where's your production data? Where's your clinical trials done by a third party? You'd be surprised. So, just because it says animal product, don't buy into it unless it meets those two criteria. So, my last slide. Here's what I want you to do. When you go home, go out, buy your veterinarian, take him to lunch or supper, and say, "Hey, look, we need to talk We need to get a veterinary-client-patient relationship. And here's what it consists of right here. Because there's some obligations on his part. Okay? Let's go through them real quick. The VCPR is the basis for interaction among veterinarians, clients, and their patients. It means that all the following are required. The veterinarian has assumed responsibility for making clinical judgments with the patient, and the client agrees to the following veterinary instructions. Not going to hold a gun in your head, but you agree to do what he says to do. The veterinarian has sufficient knowledge of the patient to initiate at least a general or preliminary diagnosis of the patient. It means the veterinarian is personally acquainted with the keeping in care of the patient by virtue of a timely examination. My criteria was at least once a year, I need to be on your farm. That incorporates the pregnancy checks, doing BSEs or something. The veterinarian is readily available for follow-up evaluation and is arranged for the following: veterinary emergency coverage and continuing care and treatment. They look, Doc, I'm all for this, using you, but when I pick up the phone, I want to hear a live voice. Okay? The better relationship you have with him, the better service you're going to get. I promise. Veterinary provides oversight of treatment, compliance, and outcome. Records are maintained. So, here's what I want you to do. Or remember, please. We talked about the importance of an accurate diagnosis. That's where it starts. We got to have that. Sometimes injecting a foreign substance is not always the answer. Call him. There's no law against calling him. Remember, BQA. Look it up, bqa.org. Adhere to labeled drug withdrawal times. There's some teeth to that. That's just not here. About 2 years ago, I had an FDA agent, little black tie, came in, threw down the badge, said, I'm with the FDA, you're the veterinary record for withdrawal time. I said, so? He said, before I leave today, I think your attitude's going to change. It did. I showed her every record I had. I was in compliance. Fortunately, I had a veterinary client-patient relationship with this producer, and I got off the hook. But if I wouldn't have, the State Board of Medical Examiners would have been down on me hard. Okay? There is teeth to the producer. You get called with withdrawal time, you get put on a list. Every auction barn puts you on that list. You get on that list twice, two strikes, and you're out. You cannot sell at a public auction bar or a public place selling livestock. Most of all, do no harm. Okay? That was the oath we took as veterinarians. Sometimes it's better not to do anything if you don't know the right thing to do. Make good decisions. Establish a relationship with your veterinarian. Use him as a return on your investment and not just an expense. Okay? So, with that being said, we can talk about fishing, anything you want to talk about. We got to have some questions. Come on, I'm not that good. I know. Got to have some questions. Yes, sir. Is there any way you can predict
other than seeing one sick, one dead,
and next? Clinical signs? Usually, the way I've seen blackleg, very good question. It's usually post like a drought, and then we get a lot of rain. We get, and that spore can stay in the ground. It's in the ground for years and years. And it's called a vegetative state, an infected state. So then, what you'll see are those calves just limping. I've seen a few of them. And believe it or not, I've saved a few. They'll just originally just kind of start limping. And if you get them quick enough, you can create an aerobic condition. Just start stabbing them with needles and penicillin. And I mean lots of penicillin. Lots. I've saved maybe five in my lifetime. But yeah, there's been a lot more dead, I can guarantee you, than I've saved. Yeah, what is lumpy jaw? Yeah.
I've got two bulls.
Yeah, lumpy jaw. What lumpy jaw is, it's kind of like the woody tongue bacteria. It's in the blood. And when animals get roughed up, usually troughs or bullfighting, that type of thing, and then that actinobacillus something, it changes about every 3 or 4 years. But if it doesn't go to the bone, it's a good prognosis. But if it goes to the bone, it's a bad prognosis. Sodium iodide works pretty good on it. Yeah.
I've had a bull that had 4 or 5 of them, you know, one time.
Yeah. And did you give them sodium iodide?
No, my dad said
sell them. Yeah. It may have been in the bone.
I have tried sodium.
Yeah. Maybe in the bone. Yes. Yeah, you get a little cross protection on that. But, you know, those gram negatives vaccines are not really good vaccines, you know. I just hadn't had good clinical response with gram negative vaccine, like foot rot, so forth like that. Good thing. Yes, sir, I believe she was. Yes.
And this is really loud. In your opinion, what's the best way to decide what type of mineral mixture to use? Is it a soil testing or actually testing the animals themselves to see what they're deficient in, or both?
Very good question. Very good question. The only objective way to do that is not your forages, but liver biopsies. And that sounds intrusive, but it's not. It's not a cap and gown thing. It's just a real quick stick in the right. You need to sample about at least seven head. You heard? They do analysis, about 15 different analyses. That gives you an objective. Use a single source mineral. Single source. Don't use multiple sources. Well, I'm a 4 ounce loose mineral guy. I'm a 4 ounce loose mineral guy. Tub to about 30 head. Make it simple. Yeah. But make sure.
You customize what's in that based on the liver biopsy.
Yes. Oh, you bet. You bet. Easy to do. I mean, I can do one in about 5 minutes. I'm sorry. Where'd you go? Oh, you had a question. Yes, sir.
Sort of stole my question. I was going to ask you about cobalt. Do you feel like it's necessary in this country? Cobalt salt or have cobalt in your salt?
Yes, I do. As an appetite stimulant, cobalt, you bet. It's not one of the ones that we are particularly deficient in, but it's one of those ones that sulfur's a bad guy and it can sure tie it up. You know, sulfur's an antagonist. Right.
What are your worming recommendations?
My deworming recommendation. Right now, we're getting green grass and sunshine, and the soils are above 50 degrees. My recommendation is getting them in right now. They're picking up larvae as we go. So using I like using a white wormer, injectable wormer, a long-lasting wormer, I hate to say names, long range or use the panicure and put out blocks. Like I was saying, we're trying to break that life cycle. We're trying to break that life cycle. And we just use a one-time wormer. We're only affecting 10% of the parasites. 90% of the parasites are in the ground.
You're talking about a paste wormer?
Yeah, a liquid wormer, a white wormer, and then an injectable wormer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The calves that are picking up larvae, say 2 months of age and older, it pays to do that. I promise you it pays to do that. In those older calves, 2 months and older. And then in the fall of the year, if you're down around the coastal area, we have liver flukes, you know, bad guys. And so you want to deworm or defluke after September the 15th with a fluke side. The only two approved fluke sides out there are Valbuzin and Ivomec Plus. I don't think Ivomec Plus is still on the market yet, is it? Still backordered, the Ivomec Plus? I mean, injectable, yes. Yes. And the reason behind that, one works real good on one class of worm, and the other one works real good on that. So we're going to get them both. Yes, sir.
I know, I agree with injectable, but sometimes it's not feasible. We got a bunch of cows running around.
Oh, I agree.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on safeguarding? What's your take on just doing pour-on? I mean, I realize what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. The take on me, personally, my experience with pour-ons, if we look at efficacy, injection, oral, and then pour-on. It's really, really hard to get a blood level with the pour-ons. I mean, they concentrate it. It's really difficult. Get a high blood level on that. Don't forget, and thank you for saying that, pour on, remind you about ectoparasites, horn flies. Big problem. Big problem. We need to use combination, ear tags, IGR, you know, fed in the feed, mineral tubs. Big problem with horn flies. And we have resistance, so we need to change out the ear tags. Back to the parasite thing, you know, it's a paradigm, you know, we've got to change every year, change every year, change every year. Use the same wormer until you feel like it's not used anymore. Because what we're doing, we're running out of bullets. You know, we're changing. We're subjecting those parasites to all our different wormers and building a super bug. So now, you know, and then, who knows, 10 years or change. The scientists will say, no, that's not right. You know? But use the same wormer until you feel like it's not working anymore. The only objective way, I'll answer the question, is to do fecal egg count. If you don't feel like your wormer's working, take some poop in from several head. The scientists say it needs to be at least 17 head and run fecal samples. That's the only objective way to do it. Because oftentimes, they're not. It's subclinical. We can't really see it, but it's robbing us. All said, all in, been a great group. Thank you.
Is at 3:30, so I think there's some refreshments outside, and we'll see you back here in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, my pleasure. Right, right. Yep, yep, yep. Yeah, yeah. So you're going to take your calves. stock them, or are you going to introduce? Oh, okay. Only deal. No, there'd be nose to nose. It's going to take more than a single bid. You're going to have, you could be done, but you're going to have more than just a single thing. When you have nose-to-nose contact, it's just like them being in the field. And they're going to bring in IVR, PTSD. You're going to have a headache with all kinds of pathogens they're bringing in. I would not suggest that. Unless you can have a big physical barrier of some kind. Right. That's right. Yeah, that's usually what most people do. Yeah, have one or the other. Oh, good. You're welcome. Oh, I need to turn this on.